Welcome one and all. Oh, we're back. We're back after a week off. Hope you all had a wonderful 4th of July, Independence Day. Yeah, ours was wonderful. We went to the big town of Bonduelle for their fireworks show, and it was wonderful. The kids loved it. And I hope you and your families had a great 4th of July as well. I'm going to get to the guest because this person is wonderful. She is a senator, the esteemed senator, and my friend and yours, former host of the show as well, Senator Kristen Dasler-Alfheim. How are you?
Hello, friends. Hello.
How are you?
I'm good.
Now, I have to ask, you know, if you watch The Crown, you know, or one of those shows, you understand, like, you are who you are, but then when you get elected, not The Crown wasn't elected, but like they become that becomes them. And even though it is temporary, that is who you are.
Yeah.
And it's something that you wear no matter what you're wearing. You know, how is that, has that changed anything, any perspective, any like, holy crap, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a reality that, in fact, my neighbors were out the other day and, Carrie Ann had walked over to say hello, and they're like, why are you never outside? Why do we never see Chris? And her response was very true. She goes, because she don't want to talk to people. Yeah. Because all day long, you are at all times prepared to interact, to answer questions, some of them hard, some of them easy, but all day long. And there's a time in the day where I just need to stop. I just need to shut down, find my couch. Honest answer, take my bra off. You know? I mean, we're real people, you know, and it's a 24-hour a day operation. And so, I mean, I enjoy this. I think that I'm the right person, the right time to be in this.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't look at anything negative on there. But when I need to shut down, I need to shut down. And that's okay.
Because you still have your job as well, right?
Yeah. I mean,
you still.
Yeah, you know, there's magic in having, you know, ADD. And I got to tell you, I found the perfect balance right now. I mean, I enjoy my career. I've done well in business, and I love my clients, and I still get to take care of them. But there are days, especially through budget season, where my head is on a swivel.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, 2 hours in this mission, and then shoom, and then you turn the other direction, and it's 2 hours in that transition, and shoom, and you go back to the other one. And you just kind of bounce back and forth. I think for the first time in my life, when I go to bed, my brain is kind of tired and I'm ready to go to sleep, which means I'm at capacity.
yeah I know this. Last night I was up until like 11:30, 12:01. I couldn't shut it off.
It's hard.
I envy that.
There might be a little kicker in there to help me, but let's be honest.
But Tito?
It's true. There's so much. And, you know, my clients enjoy that I'm involved. They know I'm a good person to do it. Mm. And, you know, in Madison, they respect the fact that I still have a business to run. And so it's all a matter of time blocking and management.
Yeah.
And I have a calendar that has the equivalent of 6 calendars combined into it. And so everything is blocked weeks in advance as to where I need to be and what I need to be doing. And my business life calendar is blended in so that we make sure that everything gets the time that it needs due to probably, and a little personal time too.
How does family? I mean, you gotta make time for
the calendar exists for all. So
that's
again,
good.
My personal, my business and my political calendar are all melded into one so that it can be respectful of every piece that needs to be in there. And you know, family time is in there as well.
That's good for you. Now you said little nugget in there, budget season. Deep breath. How was that? I've only heard stories.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, I think my favorite word is unbelievable because it doesn't really imply good, bad, or otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, this is my first one, so it's a learning opportunity. Yeah. And I think it's interesting that coming in this one, again, maps matter. And this is the first half of the map change. And so that enters a new dynamic. So not only
talk about that.
Well, you know, half of the Senate came through elections last time. So the Senate Democrats increased their total by 4. And all 4 that came in are in competitive districts, extremely competitive districts. So you have a strong, strong Democratic caucus in Madison. You now have 4 new voices coming in, along with one that was already there, which is Brad Paff. And so you have a little bit more purple involved with the blue because we're all representing our constituency the best that we can in the way that we ran. And that in itself is a shift for the Democratic caucus. And I will tell you, I will be a fan of Dianne Hesselbein for a very, very long time.
How come?
Because managing change is difficult. Managing personalities is difficult as it is. And when you have a group that has been together, locked in a corner because of the gerrymandering, that have had zero control, then we get a little bit of control back and now you have new voices. To manage through the change of a caucus in its overall makeup, in the first opportunity that the Democrats have to have any say whatsoever in a budget in, I mean, a long, long time.
Yeah.
That takes skill. It takes courage.
This and is what, 2008?
Yeah. And she did it masterfully. I mean, truly.
Diane is a leader of the Senate.
Diane is
the
leader.
Caucus.
And I say leader with a capital L.
Okay. So, and how, I mean, don't divulge too much, but I do want to, how did that, what happened behind closed doors?
Well, I'm not even sure I know the rules. I know during the budget session, we're in a caucus, we don't get to talk about what's going on because you don't want to give away the negotiations. Yeah. But I will say that you know, we didn't even know what the governor had negotiated to with the Republicans until about 10 days before the budget was passed. None of it was disclosed. There were no negotiations with the Democrats and the Republicans until 10 days before. It was the governor working with them. And honestly,
governor with Republicans first?
Only with Republicans only until, again, the final 10 days.
And for people that are listening who, you know, are, oh, goody. You know,
well,
that's how could he not? That is because maps matter.
Maps matter.
That forces him to do that.
And again, I'm very respectful of Zach Madden and the governor. I think where they got the budget to in those negotiations was far better than we thought. It was far better than we thought he would get. But I think the reality, and this is my opinion, and I've shared this with the governor's team, I think that the governor could have utilized a different strategy. I think that he used the same strategy on this budget as he has for the two prior budgets.
Which was what?
Which was the Democrats have no leverage, so it's all up to him. And he did his best to play defense against the Republican budget. And that's what he did. Now, this budget, this cycle, with, again, half of our new maps in, there was leverage. Not a lot, but there was leverage in the Senate. And again, I think it's fair to say that a different strategy could have been utilized. If the leverage was known, then why not apply the leverage from the beginning as opposed to the end? And again, he's done a great job. He gets to do whatever he wants to do. But my opinion, and again, I've shared this, it's not a secret with his team. My opinion is I would have played that strategy differently.
So I sit down with the Democrats first and then go to the Republicans and say, listen, if you don't do this,
well, everybody, you know, kind of knew that the Senate Republicans were going to have a hard time. They were going to need a vote or two. And I think the assumption was that they would just come to a deal and one or two Democrats would get picked off. And to the credit of Mark Spreitzer, Senator Spreitzer, and Senator Hesselbein, they had our caucus pull together. And my answer was, Diane has my proxy. And all of us said that. In essence, the answer was, we have 15 no's until we're at the table to work and negotiate this deal. We are 15 no's. You are not going to pick off one of us that's purple or two of us that are purple. It's not going to work that way. And that, again, takes leadership.
Yeah.
It takes leadership. So we banded together as a caucus to say, no, we are going to expect more. And Diane went to the table and literally, again, first, give her credit, first Democrat there in a long time. Second, first woman there. And she is going head-to-head with Robin Voss. And you know he's had the run of the world for a very long time.
Yes.
And she not only held her own, she got far more, far more than he ever wanted to give up.
What are the things that she got that he didn't want to give up?
Everything. Well. So, I mean, I'll take it back a bit. You know, in my opinion, there were only four options for this budget.
Yep.
One was to accept the Republican budget as it was. I mean, Tony's budget goes in and then it means nothing because they strip everything out back to base. So the worst option, in my opinion, was to go back to base, which would have been no budget whatsoever. That is what a few of the Senate Republicans were hoping for, because going back to base is theoretically, and it actually is, a cut to what spending had been.
What does that mean, going back to base?
Going back to base means you go back to the base budget of the following, of the prior budget. So funding at education, funding special education, there was zero child care, there's no increases for anything, and there's a tremendous amount of temporary positions that are not made permanent by the Republicans, so we would have lost a lot of that. There's a lot of programs that are stacked on a temporary basis. So all of that gets stripped off. So we not only would not have moved forward, we would have moved backwards. And okay. There were literally Republican senators voting for that. That's what they wanted.
How so would they do that?
By just not.
Why would they do that?
Again, they have the majority. So if they can't pass a budget, if we couldn't pass a budget on time, that's what would happen. It's a reversion back to the base.
To the last budget.
And then again, all of the excess temporary stuff gets pulled off. So it's worse than going. It's worse than holding status quo. It's backwards from there. That was the worst option.
Yeah.
The second worst option would have been accepting the Republican JFC budget, because the Republican JFC budget had, 37 and 39 for special education. You know they didn't want to do any special education.
Why not special education? 37 and 39.
37% would be the reimbursement, some certain.
Oh, okay.
Which, again, we all know that we want some sufficient so that the schools can actually count on and bank on what's
absolutely
coming in. Doesn't happen.
Yep.
Okay. So they were going to give 37 and 39 on special education. They didn't want to do any child care whatsoever. We just know this to be true. The governor, the Republicans' version of things is not at all where the Democratic philosophy stands. That's the second worst option. Then you have where, in essence, the governor had gotten to in negotiations, which was, I think, a little bit ahead of that, and the child care came into play. And childcare was a big deal. And again, I know that there's disappointment in this budget. There's no question that we on the Democratic side believe in the need to facilitate our childcare programs across the state. Childcare Counts has kept it afloat. Governor's was a hard must have it in there in the negotiations. And I think he actually did a great job. The disappointment is that it doesn't cover the full budget. Yep, I know. Because they wanted zero. They wanted none. So the governor negotiated to cover the first year the way that we knew that it would work. He did get a tremendous increase in the SHARES reimbursement rate from 50 up to 75%, which is a big deal, especially for the lower income communities. So in essence, the daycare providers can afford to take those kids in.
Yep.
But he had to give up. Again, compromise means you have to let. The Republican philosophy is that we shouldn't be throwing money at childcare. We should be making it easier to be in childcare. A compromise means you had to give them a shot. So this budget on childcare says we're going to basically extend childcare counts-ish, whatever they want to call it, for a year. Meanwhile, the Gobin bills, or the Republican versions of let's fix childcare our way, were put in for the first year. So in essence, the Republicans are going to have a chance to validate that program helps or works, or they won't. And at the end of that 1 year, we're going to either have to do a budget amendment or an amended budget that then takes care of child care, or we will have a functioning system, or perhaps a combination of the two, which is not a bad idea. But the idea that we got nothing is not true, because nothing would have been the Republicans winning, giving nothing to child care, and everything would have crashed and burned. So 50% of that, of 100%, is a pretty good number. And again, now there's more work to be done, and we have to work together to make that happen.
Yeah, we're talking with Senator Chris Dasper-Elfheim. I want to drill down a little bit on that, just to kind of clear things up for people, because that's a big topic here on the other end of the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.